Evening. So for those of you listening online, I just imposed upon the those in the front row to hold on to some note cards for me. And I will explain what those are for here momentarily. All right, so I've been having the opportunity to deliver a series of messages on what we can call Christian apologetics. And the last time I had an opportunity to teach slash preach on a Sunday evening, we covered some aspects of the historical Jesus. Excuse me. And if you remember correctly, one of the things we did in the first lesson was we laid the foundation for a study in the Christian apologetics because the Christian faith is an objective faith. In other words, it is basically a faith in Jesus of Nazareth, that he is the Son of God. We talked about Christianity being a historical faith that's based upon real people, places, and events. Of course, we also talked about Christian faith being an objective faith. In other words, a rational and intelligent faith. One that invites people to use their brains. Okay, Christianity isn't about coming through the doors and shutting off your brain and throwing the reason out the window. Christianity is a lot more than that. And of course, we started talking a little bit more about who Jesus is, and that from a strictly secular perspective, we can find all sorts of evidence for Jesus' existence, both in pagan sources and in what we can call religious sources outside of the Bible. So there's, pagan sources from Thallus and some other writers. Cornelius Tacitus is a good example of those. Pliny the Younger, et cetera, et cetera. And then there's some Jewish sources. The Talmud is, for instance. Flavius Josephus is another example. And one of the things we talked about with that evidence is that it does help us to have a solid basis upon which, from a historical and reasonable perspective, we can build a belief in Jesus that he existed. That's what it does. But what it does not do is prove that Jesus was the Son of God. Okay? And that's very important. And one of the things that we have to do and we have to understand is that to really know that, we have to look elsewhere. So that brings us to tonight. For the Christian, the only record which describes in any detail the life and death of Jesus Christ is the New Testament. But here's a question. Is it, as a historical document, reliable? Can we trust it to be accurate in relating facts of history concerning Jesus, his life, his death, and his resurrection? And what about all the things that happened after Jesus' supposed resurrection? Can we trust the historical account? Can we trust the New Testament? Is it an accurate copy of what the original authors penned? It's a great question. These are some of the questions we're going to attempt to answer as we begin to examine the historical reliability of the New Testament. But first, we have to appreciate something very important. And this is one of the reasons I handed the note cards to these guys, and I'll explain that in just a moment. I'm dating myself just a little bit, but I tried to pick something that was middle of the road a little bit. Anybody ever heard of Larry King? Raise your hand. Okay, so everybody over the age of about 12 or 13 has probably heard of Larry King, maybe 15 or more, has probably heard of Larry King. Well, Larry King was broadcaster, but he was what I'll call a cultured newsman. And what I mean by cultured news is that it was directed and specifically pointed out so that he would go this direction with the news, whatever direction it was that his supporters were making him go. He would, of course, claim otherwise, but this is my opinion, too. So, interesting thing, he had on, this was in the mid-80s, he had on a psychic quote unquote, a psychic, Shirley MacLaine. I know most of you guys who are a little bit older than 15 probably remember Shirley MacLaine, right? She was supposedly one who could speak to the dead and could utter prophecy and could foretell the future and all kinds of weird Eastern mysticism and Satanistic and kind of mumbo-jumbo nonsense that was really big in the 80s, and people bought into it and they bought her books and they made her very, very wealthy. So she was on Larry King because she was an important person that needed to get out there so that everybody knew who this person was. And of course, Larry King had a talk show, so people would call in. And while Larry King was interviewing this woman, this fraud, a guy called in and said, basically, quoted the New Testament and said, "You're a liar, you're spreading Satanism, and you need to repent." And Larry King says, "Hey, what's your response to that?" She says, "Well, we all know that the New Testament has been copied and recopied by so many people over so many millions or so many hundreds of years that it's no longer reliable." And Larry King goes, "Everybody knows that." And they move on. They don't actually answer the question, of course. They just move on. So this is the purpose of our note cards this evening. Anybody ever heard of the telephone game? How many times have you talked to somebody about the New Testament and they say, "That's been copied and recopied so many times. It's been passed down via oral tradition so many times. How can you trust anything that thing says? It's full of contradictions. You're wasting your life. It's a lie." Anybody ever tell you that? Maybe they don't say those exact words, but that's certainly their implication, right? Okay, you guys are lucky. You guys aren't. Okay, I'm going to start down here. And I'm going to whisper something in Mrs. Wilson's ear, if that's okay, Mrs. Wilson. Okay? I don't want you to smack me or anything. I'm going to whisper something in your ear. I'm only going to tell you once. Okay? And you have to pass it on to Judy. And you can't write it down. If that's what you're getting paper out. Oh, I thought you were being sneaky. Yeah, well, I don't know. It's going to be a little tough. Okay. Yeah. So we're only going to go four deep. Okay, we're only going to go four deep, so you guys are going to have to hang out for this one, okay? So I'm going to whisper it to Mrs. Wilson. I'm only going to tell her once, and then she's going to whisper it to Judy, and Judy's only going to whisper it once. That's it. You don't get to repeat it. So listen well. And then I'll be over with you guys in just a second, okay? All right, you ready? Hopefully I don't giggle too much. Should probably take off the mic, too. Huh? You can't giggle either. Okay, ready? Okay, so while they're doing that, we're going to come over here, and I'm going to hand this to them. Just write it down, copy it, each one of you. So while they're doing that, there's a reason that we're doing this. It's not just for the fun of it, but because I think this is a valid illustration and a good way to answer that question, that objection to the New Testament being something that's been copied and recopied so many times that nobody can understand it or believe it. Okay? So, let me know when you guys are done. You guys got it? Did you pass it on? You pass it on to your dad. And you can only say it once. Yep, just pass it down. Okay, that's all right. You can copy off of him. This is where you can copy each other's homework. All right. I'm going to wait for these guys for just a sec. You got it, Mr. Wilson? Got it in your head? And he hasn't gotten it yet. Can I see one of your copies for a sec?
No, I didn't finish.
Well, you should have. You got it, Mr. Wilson? Okay. This would be even. There's a reason I chose you, but that's not why. Okay. Yeah, I just gave him a copy. Yeah, you didn't have a card, Dave. So if you're done and you got it copied, let me see it. Those are, I gave you those to you. I'll take the pens back. Did you get a chance to write it down completely? Here.
Okay.
I need you to do it, please.
I
yeah, I give it back. Okay. All right. It's all right, Mrs. Simpson. If you don't want to do it, that's fine, because it's your birthday, and I don't want to make you mad. Well, happy birthday anyway. All right. You have an extra pen there, but that's okay. Okay. I'm going to check these real quick. Okay. All right. Success did good. All right, Mr. Wilson. Tell me what you heard.
Inaudible. Ninjas are aching.
Oh. Okay. Them ninjas, I tell you what. Well, thank you for proving the point, because they were so far off from it, it's not even close. All right. Mrs. Wilson, do you mind telling me what you heard? She doesn't remember. That's even better. This is perfect. Okay. Can you guys tell me what you heard? Can you remember what you heard?
I think it was doors and doorknobs, hasps and hinges are creaking.
Okay. That's pretty good. Here's what I said. All right, you ready? The doorknobs and door jams with hasps and hinges are creaking. There weren't any ninjas, and there wasn't any aching. But here's the thing. Okay? The guys on the left here that wrote them down, that got a copy of it, there were some differences. Uh-oh, so the New Testament is unreliable. We're done. Let's all go home. Here's what I wrote. The doorknobs with an ampersand or a plus sign and door jams with hasps and, spelled out, hinges are creaking. You know what some people did? They wrote out "and" instead of writing the plus sign. So that completely invalidates what I wrote originally, right? No. Here's the thing, guys. When people say that the New Testament was copied by oral tradition, all it does is exposes their ignorance on the subject. Because the New Testament was never passed down via oral tradition. It was given to a letter. Paul, for instance, writes a letter and passes it on to a church. What do you think that church, somebody in that church did almost immediately? They made copies. And often, the growth in that copy was what we call geometric. It wasn't linear. See, what we had over here was a linear passing of information. That means that once I gave it to Mrs. Wilson, she gave it to Judy, and it was gone. No offense. It was gone, right? You forgot what it was. It's a linear progression of information. A linear progression of information has no fail-safe. It has no backup. But what I did here, and this was a good example, is that I gave it to these guys and they started copying it. Mrs. Simpson didn't. She ran out of paper or she ran out of ink or whatever it was. But that's okay. Because guess what? These guys had copies. And even though some of the copies are a little different, we can get the information, put it together, and understand 100% accuracy what I originally said. Even if it is nonsense in this case. So when people say that the New Testament is unreliable because it was passed down via oral tradition, it just exposes their ignorance. Because the New Testament was not passed along via oral tradition. It was passed along in written format. And I was talking about geometric growth. What I mean by that is, let's say that Mrs. Simpson is the scribe. I pass the letter to Mrs. Simpson and she makes 5 copies. She takes those 5 copies and she gives them to 5 more churches, and those churches make 5 copies. Or 10 copies, or 15 copies, or 30 copies. And soon, the number of copies for that particular article or letter is almost innumerable. Guys, we'll talk about this a little in more detail next time I have the opportunity to preach, but there are thousands and thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of copies in either whole or part of the New Testament. More than any other book in antiquity. It's amazing. It is flat out embarrassing how much more authoritative information there is on the New Testament. So it's then the next closest book, which I'll give you extra credit the next time I preach if you know what that one is. So, at any rate, so the question becomes, can we believe this? Well, we have to understand as Christians that, well, let me ask you a question. This is a question that Well, why do you believe? And I'm going to come out and pick on somebody. Okay, you ready? I'm going to pick on somebody who doesn't like to talk. Everyone, no. I'll leave you alone. Okay, I know you've been up there for a time. And I know you like to talk, so I'm not going to talk to you. Frank, buddy. Frank, can you tell me why you believe in Jesus?
Because the Bible is scripturally accurate or historically accurate.
Okay, good answer. Because the Bible is historically accurate, that's one. Let's come back to Brad. Can I ask you the same question, Brad? You ready? And Mark Taylor, well, no, I'm not going to talk to you. I don't have the time.
Well, I totally agree with what Frank had to say. And also, proof is in the Bible, no doubt. And it's been proven to me over and over by certain people that have taught me. And they have opened my eyes. And also, you just look out here at creation. You know, I mean...
Well, how do we know that God of Rampha didn't do that?
Because it's not chaos.
Okay. Okay, so both Frank and Brad, and I could go back to Mr. Taylor, and he would give you a very lengthy explanation, and I would appreciate that. But here's the thing. Why do you believe that Jesus is real? Why do you believe that Jesus walked on water? Where have you heard about Jesus? You go to the annals of Josephus, right? Everybody pull out your books of Josephus. Oh, wait. You ever tried to read that? It's painful. We don't have Josephus. Nobody carried... Well, if you have electronic, you probably have it. Well, how do we know that Jesus fed the 5,000? What? It's written down. Where is it written down, Mr. Simpson? In the Bible, specifically in the New Testament. Guys, without the New Testament, our faith is worthless. It doesn't exist. If God had not planned it out so that we would have the New Testament in a reliable form such as we do today, our faith would be based on nothing. I mean, you have the historical evidence from the Old Testament, right? But let's face it, without the New Testament, you're not going to see it in the Old. Right? The Jews didn't. And they were the ones whom God spoke to. Right? They didn't see it. A lot of them still don't. Here's the question. What if it were shown concerning the New Testament that it was written over 100 years after the events that supposedly occurred? Let me ask you a question. I really don't want to date anybody, but I kind of have to for the illustration. How many of you were alive when Kennedy was assassinated? Okay. How many of you were alive? Well, I can't go back that far because none of you were. Okay, so the Kennedy assassination. Mr. Simpson, could you tell me everything you know about the Kennedy assassination and get it 100% accurate? Okay.
Conspiracy theories.
Yeah, conspiracy theories. Where's Mr. Hopper when we need him? Oh, Brad's back there too. Okay, so how about the rest of you? You know, you shot from the grassy knoll, right? Was it shot once or twice? Was it in Dallas or was it in Fort Worth? Maybe it was Phoenix. It was Texas somewhere. Right? Maybe it was Los Angeles. Most people get shot in Los Angeles. Or Chicago! Or maybe it was Bones Arcade. Here's the thing. Okay, let me ask you another question. How many of you are alive during 9/11? Most of you raised your hand. Now, again, conspiracy theories aside, you be quiet. Conspiracy theories aside, how many of you could accurately tell me what happened? Most of you probably could. Most of you could get together and, at least from the perspective of buildings, planes, could probably get all the information correct, right? The thing is that the further in history, or the further in the past that an event occurred, the more difficult and the less reliable the information is when written down. In other words, if an event occurred over 100 years ago and somebody just writes about it today, then 100 years of separation from the event does not exactly build a lot of confidence in the description of the events. So you look at the New Testament. If the New Testament had been written, as according to some scholars, a few hundred years after the events had occurred, then we would have some major problems trusting it. I would. Okay? That's a question we're going to answer. How about... This is one that always blows me away. How about if the New Testament were filled with errors in reference to geography, people, and events? How about if it was? That would be issues, right? That's why, you know, this is where this kind of stuff comes up. How many of you know, or knew, before I told you, that there were actually errors in the copies of the New Testament? Did you know that? Thank you, Mr. Simpson. Mr. Simpson under his breath said very, very few. Okay. And you know, they were things like, instead of saying knobs and door jams, they went door jams and doorknobs. Whew, boy, that's a big change. Or they used and instead of the plus sign. But if there were references to places that never existed or people that never existed or events that never occurred, we'd have some issues. Or animals that never existed. Getting off track there, Mr. Simpson. That's okay. All right. Or how about if the manuscript evidence is very scarce and 1,000 years removed from the original documents? I kind of covered this, but you know what we don't have, guys? And I find this... I don't know if the word is ironic, but I'm actually very thankful for it. We do not have the autographs, the original ones that were penned by the original authors. We don't have them anywhere. And I will submit to you that the reason we don't have them is for the same reason that they never found the body of Moses. Because they didn't. They knew what would happen. Remember the bronze serpent? What did they do? Oh, hey, let's bow down and worship the bronze serpent instead of the God who made it happen. It's a physical thing. We can worship it. You know, if we had the autograph somewhere, the ones that were actually penned by Paul or Peter or pick any of the other writers, do you think that they would be worshipped? Oh, absolutely they would. I mean, there are entire religions based upon the bones of people who were supposedly quote-unquote saints. They build buildings around them. Huge buildings, like Notre Dame, or Notre Dame, if you want to be more specific. And here's another side of that. So, let's say that those things that I mentioned, the questions that I asked, let's say that they were true. Let's say that the manuscripts were thousands of years from the events that actually occurred. Or let's say that there were all kinds of errors in the references to geography, people and places, or events. Well, then that would just simply be blind faith. And you know what? Blind faith may seem adequate for some. Oh, I wish Mr. and Mrs. Bolton were here. I'm going to pick on Mackenzie. You mind if I pick on Mackenzie for a second? I'll be nice. I like Mackenzie. Okay, Mackenzie, got a question for you. It's all right. You're in the headlights. Why do you do what your mom and dad say? That's not being very helpful, Karen.
Why do you do it?
Because it's the right thing to do.
Okay, because it's the right thing to do. Why do you know it's the right thing to do?
You don't.
You don't. Okay. You're getting close. How about you, Braden? Why do you do what your parents tell you to do?
Because I trust them.
Okay, because you trust them, and because they tell you to do it. Right? You want to have food, you want to have a place to sleep, you do what mom and dad tell you, right? There's a bit of blind faith there. As a 3-year-old, and you know, I could ask, oh, Frank's letting me back bug him again. Little kids, they have to have blind faith in their parents, don't they? They're made that way. But you know what, guys? We're not infants. We have to grow up. Blind faith is not adequate for us. And here's another one that blind faith seems to be good for, or another group of people, is for those who have never had their faith questioned. They're where they're put in environments that they're never really exposed to the questions or exposed to an environment where their faith is challenged. Let's get out of the religious, well, the easily defined religious realm, and let's talk about universities and public schools. Most kids that come out, and I was a product of the public education system, but most kids that come out of the public education system, and I'm going to say most, because some don't, most that come out have one way of thinking. They've been programmed to think that way. And they've never had their faith questioned, because that's all that they've ever been pushed. Because evolution is true, therefore everything else, the Bible, is nonsense. Just as a quick example. But, brethren, that is not adequate for us. We have to be able to answer the questions. So I hope that through the exercise tonight, we now appreciate the need to carefully examine the evidence for the historical reliability of the New Testament. Brethren, we cannot simply have a faith that is based on nothing. We have to have a faith that is based on reason and fact. And when we do that, when we look at the historical reliability of the New Testament, we're going to apply the same kind of tests that are applied to any ancient documents. And we're going to determine its reliability based upon the same tests. And of course, the next study that we're going to work through is really the acid test for any ancient document claiming to be a historical record of any event. Brethren, I thank you very much for your time. Thank you for dealing with me in a little bit of foolishness tonight.